Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn.
Welcome again to How's New York, everyone. We're going to continue with our micro-series on wills and estate planning, and part three is coming up right now on power of attorney. And here's our host once again, Robert Howe.
Well, thank you, Jason, and welcome everyone to How's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe. And as always, we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community politics, and any hot topics of the day. We've launched a series of micro-whatevers to touch a few issues about wills, estate planning that you probably heard about but probably never got the opportunity to ask anybody about. So over the last couple of series, we talked about wills, how to prepare for them, what they did, etc. And, of course, wills are documents that take effect when you're not around. So we're going to switch gears a little to documents that you need while you're around. And one of those is a power of attorney. And you probably heard of the term power of attorney. Essentially, it means giving somebody else the power to do something on your behalf when you're not able to. Now, that sounds good, but as we know, many times in legal practice, people are able to turn good things into bad things. And by that, I mean a document that allows someone else to go to the bank for you or sign checks for you or change beneficiaries, etc., on various accounts. Could turn out to be a bad thing if they make themselves the agent, or if they benefit themselves the agent. And as always, you know, power of attorney was a simple form, maybe one page back in front. And over the years that I've been practicing, the 42 years I've been practicing, it has now turned into an almost 10-page document. And with a little work, you could probably make it into a 15-page document. But that's what we're going to talk about. Jason, I'm wondering your thoughts on powers of attorney, what you've heard about them, if you kind of feel they're important or you never really gave much consideration to them.
Well, my thoughts are a little bit biased, having discussed power of attorney with you over the course of the years in our shows. But I always thought power of attorney, to me, just the term, makes it seem as if you need to find a lawyer and have them take control of all your decision-making.
Okay, so that does bring up a problem in law. So sometimes we lawyers and those legislators name things that really confuse people and don't have anything to do with the truth. It's sort of like the government when they spent all that money and they said it was the Inflation Reduction Act. So the power of attorney, hopefully you'll use an attorney. It's good for me. It may cost you a few dollars. Or if you don't want to, you could certainly pick up a form at the at a local stationery store. But, you know, power of attorney. So power of attorney, I don't know how the heck they got that term, how attorney got stuck in there. But in any event, it's sort of a delegation of your powers to somebody else. And why would you want to do that? Well, you'd want to do it in the event you were not available. You were on vacation. You were on the other side of the United States. Or, worst case, you were incapable. You broke something or you suffered a serious accident and you were not capable of making decisions. So, as you know, life moves on and you get money and you have to spend money and you have to fill out forms and you have to converse with governmental authorities every now and then, or life insurance companies, or your medical insurance companies. And you know the old saying, how many times have you been talking on the phone to somebody, say, oh, I'm just calling up for some information about such and such thing. It's for my son or for my wife or whatever, or a friend of mine. And the person on the other end immediately says, I can't talk to you. I can only discuss this with the person himself or herself. And, of course, the reason you're doing it is because that person can't do it themselves. They are incapacitated somehow or they're not available. So it is a pretty important document to have. Many people don't realize the importance of it. But as important as it is, that's how powerful it is also. And I mentioned, touched on, you know, if you delegate someone all of these powers to act on your behalf, essentially, if they're not a really decent, honest person, they could, you know, start using the money for their own accounts. Now, they swear, the agent is, that they're not going to do that. But, you know, stuff happens, and all of a sudden the agent's kid needs braces, needs to go to another school, there's a tax bill, there's some sort of an emergency, and they feel, well, let me dip into the person's funds who gave me, you know, this power. So over the years, what was, you know, a back and front page form turned into several pages. I don't know if it will stop people from being dishonest. Of course, if you want to be dishonest, you're probably going to be it no matter what the form looks like. But it does have some protections in there, and it also, makes the form a little easier to execute. Now, once again, you know, the two-page form 40 years ago has now turned into a 10-page form, and not everybody knows how to execute it anymore. So, like most things with government, they try to make things, and they embark on trying to make things easier, and sometimes it makes it a little harder. And that's the story of all the various changes that the power of attorney has gone through. And so the most recent one is a 2021 form. And the first page of the form, most of the standard forms have this, or are required to have this, is a caution to the principal. And that basically says, look, this is a powerful document. Don't give it to anybody unless, as I say, you trust them 101%. Maybe you shouldn't trust 102 or 103%, but in any event, over 100%. And, you know, the warning is right there on the front page. But, you know, for all the warnings in the world, put your seatbelt on. Don't smoke cigarettes. Alcohol could be bad for you. Sometimes warnings are either not read, understood, or complied with. But in any event, there is an attempt on page one of the power of attorney to warn the person. So when it comes down to, you know, so this is a document as opposed to, you know, we were talking about wills, and wills deal with when you're not around and how your estate is going to be administered. This is a document that works while you are around, and it could help you out. It could be convenient for you. Like I said, if you were not in town and had to do something, your agent could sign on your behalf, or if you became, you know, incapacitated. So it's really a little bit of financial insurance that if something happened to you when you were incapacitated, that your estate could, that your financial estate could still carry on and pay bills, contact government agencies, deal with other financial institutions where you may have money, or you may have life insurance, or you may have medical insurance. So it is a very important document while you're alive. What I usually, you know, so when I tell people this, half of them come back to me and they say, you know, I heard a bad thing that someone took somebody else's money, you know, with a power of attorney. And I say, yeah, exactly. And then they get a little, even though I told them it's an important document to have, now they get a little skittish, and they really don't want to give that. And some, you know, surprisingly, some clients don't want to even give it to their family members. Well, maybe they could be the worst. Who knows? What do you think, a family member or a friend giving the power of attorney to Jason?
You know what? It's probably a toss-up because I have heard stories. I've heard horror stories about, you know, family members completely doing 180s and then all and relationship, family relationships being ruined by it. And then, you know, so it's really, I guess it depends on the individual. I mean, it is a big undertaking to ask of someone and a responsibility for someone to have that oversight and that responsibility. So I'd really have to say it's probably split down the middle.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's a shame that it's split down the middle. It should be, you know, you should be able to trust your family members. But as you're pointing out, that's not always the case. So after you get past the first page, the warning page, the next couple pages deal with you appointing somebody. And like I said, you'd want to appoint someone who you trust 101%. You also want to appoint someone who's around. You don't want to say, oh, my cousin out in Oregon is going to be my agent. Well, that's workable, but it's not that easy to have that person on your behalf if they're 3,000 miles away from you. So you might want to consider a trustworthy person within the, you know, the New York City metropolitan area. Then it says something about this power of attorney is going to be good even if I'm incapacitated. So that's really the key. You don't want to give someone the power of attorney to do stuff when you're able to do all the stuff yourself, you know, but for the fact that you might be out of town for something or other. You really want to give it to the person if you become incapacitated. But the problem then is the person who accepts the power of attorney says, yeah, but Jason's incapacitated now. How do I know he'd want to do this? And there is the leap of faith that the power of attorney says, look, if Jason is incapacitated, he has trusted me to do this, and I can still do all his financial stuff, his banking stuff, his real estate stuff. I can talk to stockbrokers. I can make claims on his behalf, etc. You know, so that's really the key is incapacity. You know, the other times powers of attorney are for convenience sake. I'm going out of town. Could you sign these papers for me, you know, next week? That's convenience. But necessity is when you're incapacitated, your life, your financial life still has to go on, but you can't do anything. You are incapacitated. So some of the powers that they give you, it's a pretty broad set of powers. As I mentioned, real estate, stock market, banking, business, insurance, estates, claims and litigation. You could probably prosecute if you became incapacitated because of an accident. Your agent could probably prosecute a personal injury action. And then also benefits from government programs. So have you ever tried calling Social Security or Medicaid and Medicare and trying to get a straight answer out of them? Very difficult. And if you do, of course, what do they say? We can't talk to you. Well, with this document, you can. So there are about 10 to 15 powers that the standard form has. And to give that power, there's a little line before each of the powers that could be initialed. So imagine initialing 15 times. There's a little bit of a fatigue that sets in. So the last line says sort of like everything above, A through O, and you would initial in P, which says everything A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. Not that far, of course. I got carried away. But you would initial in P, and that would give all of the above powers, you know, to your agent. Then there's the whole thing of gifting. You can theoretically give away, the agent can give gifts away if you had to either reduce your tax burden or if you're speaking to some government agency and they say, well, Jason makes too much money right now or has too much money. You, the agent, are able to give the money away, gifted away, $5,000 increments, you know, to other people, friends and family, for, you know, make yourself eligible. So that is kind of a prior form was a little complicated because they had a separate rider, an attachment to the power of attorney. The most recent form has incorporated that into, you know, the main form. So you can make gifts. And when I say make gifts, sometimes my clients look at me and I say, well, it doesn't mean gifts like Christmas time. These are gifts of necessity to get your, you know, some sort of income or assets down so you qualify for a program or you can reduce your taxes somewhere. The form itself also allows you to make modifications. So if you have really specific things that you want to do with the power of attorney, most, at least in my area, I do a lot of real estate closings. Clients maybe in other parts of the country, and they'll say, Mr. Howe, you have to represent us, and we'll give you a power of attorney. So I don't want to be the agent for, like, all of their life insurance, bank accounts, investment accounts. No, no. They give me a power specifically limited to the sale of 123 86th Street in Brooklyn. And that's all I can do with that power of attorney, and I go to a closing, and I can sign all the papers on behalf of the client who's not in town. So that's a modification section. It's also sort of a limitation section where you can say, I only want my agent to do certain things. So you can kind of limit them. People sometimes say, hey, I'm acting as your agent. Do I get to, you know, am I going to be compensated for that? And yes, you can be compensated, but you probably should spell it out somewhere in the document. You know, what is the value of your services worth? $50 an hour, $100 an hour, $500 an hour, who knows? But that should really be spelled out. And to do minor things, you probably don't need to be compensated. If you're spending days and hours, you know, doing something for the principal, you know, you probably should be compensated. Also, one of the good things that the newest form has is for people who, for some physical reason, cannot sign their own name. Now, they're competent, but, you know, maybe they broke their arm or had a stroke and can't move their arm to sign. So the most recent version of the power of attorney allows the principal who may be laying in a hospital bed, say, Jason, I want you to sign on my behalf. Now, in the past, when a client came to me and said, oh, Uncle Joe needs a power of attorney, the two things I say, is he competent and can he sign? And usually they say, sure, he's competent, but he can't sign. So this is a pretty good change to the current version of the powers of attorney because it allows the person who cannot physically sign to direct somebody to do that. And the legislature felt that just because a person has some sort of handwriting disability, they should not be precluded from the benefits of having a power of attorney. So that's really the most important aspects of the power of attorney. They did make it a little more difficult after the principal signs. They want both a notary and two witnesses to sign. And for some reason, they allow the notary to notarize and be the witness. So it's sort of duplicate. The long and the short of it is, you know, previously, you didn't need a whole group of people to execute this document. And now you need a couple people involved. And it particularly is a problem if you go to a person's house and you say, look, I can be one witness, but you have to get somebody else. And sometimes they don't have anybody, or sometimes they're reluctant to have a neighbor come in and do anything. But the newest forms require two witnesses and a notary. Essentially, if the notary wants to be the witness, it's two people. But if you're traveling to somebody's house, sometimes you don't have the availability of the second person. Then after the principal signs and it's notarized and there are two witnesses, there are a couple forms for the agent to sign. Now, those forms basically say, look, I'm going to act responsibly. I'm not going to, you know, take any of this person's money. I'm not going to spend it for myself. The issue that comes up to the consternation of a lot of clients is that it requires the agent to sign, and many times the principal doesn't want the agent to know necessarily that they made them the power of attorney until such time as they need to. Or second, generally when the principal comes to my office to sign, they usually don't bring the agent along, and they say, well, how am I going to get the agent to sign? Well, the good thing is the agent doesn't have to sign simultaneously. They can sign sometime in the future. It's kind of hard to understand. I always see clients struggling with that thought that they can, that the principal can sign and the successor agent, there's a blank signature line for that person. Why isn't he being required to sign? But the legislature says the agent doesn't need to sign it until sometime in the future. And then finally in the document, you see a form called full force and effect. So the person accepting this power of attorney, let's say you walk into a bank and say, I need to do some financial transactions. I have this power of attorney. You know, the banker or the officer will say to you, is this power still in full force and effect? Did Jason revoke it? And they will say it is still in full force and effect, and Jason did not revoke it. And they will sign the document and have it notarized. So that sort of protects, you know, the people who are accepting it because they don't know who Jason is necessarily, and they don't know. Maybe yesterday you revoked it, and this person gets angry with you and figures, let me go to the bank and cash a few checks on Jason's account. And so that is sort of the backup. Once again, it's a powerful document. It's a useful document. It could be used to clean out somebody's bank account. Hopefully that's not the case. Generally, to provide for that, we tell the client, in addition, you know, to picking a reputable agent, you know, don't necessarily give this power out the moment you get home. Leave it with your important papers. If in the event of an emergency you're in the hospital, you tell your family members or whoever, your trustworthy friends, look, in the event of an emergency, I did see a lawyer, and all of my important papers, my will, my healthcare proxy, my living will and my power of attorney are all, you know, in the top desk drawer. And that should be probably enough, you know, to protect the principal from having, you know, their accounts cleared up. So that is power of attorney, really a necessary document to have, a few safeguards that have to be put in place. But while you're alive, it's a very important document to have. Well, let me tell you what the alternative is. The alternative is if you don't have this, someone would have to go to court and say, I want to be appointed the representative of Jason. And so a court would entertain that person's application. But the court hires a handful of lawyers and doctors to, you know, study this. And, you know, it could be about, you know, 6 months to a year later and maybe several thousands up to $10,000 before this is all sorted out. And by doing a power of attorney for a much smaller fee probably, you know, negates the need to go to court and have the court and lawyers involved in your life. So I think that was a pretty comprehensive review. I don't know if you have questions or comments, Jason, on, you know, all of that.
I think we covered a lot. I think that was, you're right, it was comprehensive. It's a very important topic, one of the bigger touch points we have from our estate planning series. And I know we got a couple more important ones to get to as well of equal importance to power of attorney. But we will save that for our next episode.
And our audience should stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that, that concludes this series, this continuing series of wills, estates, and documents you need, you know, to carry on your life both while you're here and while you may not be here. And thank you to Jason Versace, my executive producer, for arranging this show. This is House New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings. Song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds.